Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone, once again welcome to Only Murders in My Mind with my co-presenters Liz.
Hello.
And Mike.
Hello.
Hope you're all well, and can we ask you to do the usual things, hit subscribe, like, send us in comments, we're always very happy to hear from you. How are you getting on, guys? Anything exciting happening in your lives at the moment?
Oh, well, I'm writing a new book.
Go on, tell us, Mum.
Well, it's not a crime book. I mean, there is a sort of a vaguely mysterious element to it, but it's a very minor mysterious element to it. So,
Wait and see, is it a wait and see one?
It's a kind of a rom-com sort of light fiction novelette, so it won't be getting featured here. But anyway, I'm pleased that I'm doing this. I'm fitting it in before starting Booker and Fitch Book 6.
How does she do it, guys?
Oh, by taking a lot of walks quite early in the day. That's how she does it.
Oh, well, what about, I won't say the word, but how are you, Mike, with your writing?
I'm fine, thank you. I've recently, as you know, I like writing drabbles, 100 word stories. So I've recently written and published a book called 100 word stories. And I'm halfway through writing a 100 word horror stories, which hopefully I'll self-publish in the next couple of weeks.
Will we be able to tell the difference?
One should be more horrific than the other.
One will have a black cover.
But you're not saying which.
No. If you want to find out, you'll have to buy a book and make up
read
your own mind.
It, yeah. They are extremely good, very short stories. And there is a skill too. If you just try it. Try writing 100-word story and see how you get on. And if you're pleased with it, send it to us and we'll read it out. So there's a challenge.
One of the joys of writing a 100-word story, well, joys, that's the right word. One of the challenges with writing a 100-word story is that in some ways getting going is quite easy. And if you end up with something like 97, 98 words, finding another two or three words to make it 100 is fairly easy. It's when you get to 102 words and you've got to get rid of two.
Yes.
And you just don't know. But it's a good exercise in editing.
Yeah. And then you think, well, if I'm get rid of that one, I ought to get rid of that one. And that makes it 99. Yeah, so now what I'm going to add to make it 100.
But yes.
As George Bernard Shaw used to say, I haven't got time to be brief. And that's the thing. There is something to polishing something of an exact size. Mm. So, 'cause I started out with flash fiction, so I feel your pain.
Yes.
Well, you could have an orator that stutters a little bit. But.
Yes.
But. Yes. Right. And we will be hearing from Mike in future episodes where he'll be reading. He's already read a couple out and they're brilliant. So we will be inviting him to read out.
Before we move on, what are you up to, Carol?
Oh, yeah,
we've
me.
All said, and, you know, can't forget you.
Yes. I've been saying this for weeks now. But the Warrington Detective series, the number 4 in the series, will be out shortly.
And I've read it and it's a cracker, so you should all buy it.
Thank you. I do feel that it's probably the best one yet. And
I believe your advanced readers are saying that.
Yes, yes. So
my wife is one of Carol's beta readers and she reckons it's the best of them so far. Mm.
Yes.
And she's very discerning, isn't she?
She is.
Yes.
I really
when I don't
do
kill her off.
No, I really appreciate her input because she is very particular about what she reads. She doesn't just read anything, does she?
So no.
The fact that she reads my books and she enjoys them means an awful lot. And it's funny because I don't sell thousands of books. I sell hundreds. And every now and again, I'll meet somebody or I'll get an email or something, you know, on Facebook saying how much they've enjoyed it. And it means an awful lot. I think it does when you get feedback like that from readers.
Yeah.
And it, as I say, it makes me weak, actually, never mind me a day.
Sorry, but talking about feedback, that's what we'd love to hear
you.
Oh, yes.
Is feedback on both on the podcast and also if you've not checked out the blog, the Only Murders in My Mind blog, please do. There's lots of interesting things happening there that you can join in with. But either one, just give us some feedback. We'd love to know what you think and where you might want us to go next.
Mm.
We really enjoy hearing from you. So Liz and I are females in crime.
Indeed.
Or criminal females.
Criminal women.
Criminal women.
Criminal women.
We both write about crime and people being killed in different ways. And today's episode is about females in crime. So we're going to talk about writers, characters, not perhaps real crime. but yeah, I'm amazed how many female writers there are. I mean, we go back and we look back and we know there are quite a lot from the 20s and 30s, more than I thought, actually. You know more about that, Liz, don't you?
Maybe slightly more.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But, you know, I mean, Agatha Christie always comes to mind when we talk about female writers. But there were quite a few, weren't
there? Yeah, there were loads in the Detection Club.
Dorothy Sayers,
Sayers.
Yeah, what area was she? Yeah,
she was era. Definitely golden age, yes, I would say. Yeah. They have Naomi Marsh, Gladys Mitchell, Josephine Tay.
Yeah.
So those are just a few examples. There's probably more that I haven't, uncovered yet. So,
yeah. Yes. And I looked at more recent authors. One of the authors I read, and I didn't start in the middle of this series. I started a series at number one, and it was Rosalia Niles, which a lot of people will know from television.
Yeah, I hadn't even realised it was books first.
Yes, it's Tess Grishin.
Right.
And she was actually, she did a guest appearance in one of the later episodes.
Oh, nice.
Which is when I sort of got interested and I thought, yeah, I actually should read these. Quite different. The two characters are different in the book. Their characteristics might be similar, but the way she describes them, because, when you've watched the series umpteen times like I have, you've got this fixed idea of what these two people, Rosalie, who is the cop, and Isles, who is the very, very clever pathologist.
Ah, right.
And they work together. Mm-hmm. And again, they're so different that they complement each other, if you like.
Yeah.
And in the book, they're two different characters altogether. But Mike has said before, when we've been doing these episodes, sometimes the rights for the characterisation and the storyline are given over to the producers of whoever's going to make the series or the film.
That's right. I mean, my wife is an avid reader, and she watched the Ancleaves, the Shetland.
Yes.
Series. Oh, yes.
And she said, she was watching them, and said, this is wrong. It's out of sequence. That doesn't happen before. So she actually emailed or said something off to Ancleaves, the author, and surprisingly got an answer back straight away.
Nice.
And basically what Ancleaves was saying is that when you sell the rights, that's what you do, you sell the rights, so that they can then change things around with very little coming back to her to say, what do you think? You've sold those rights.
I mean, going back to, I'm sure we've spoken about it before, Slow Horses.
Yes.
Fantastic series, both in book and in TV form, but the TV, there are discrepancies. Mm. I can entirely see why, for dramatic purposes, but you will spot them, because they're sometimes they're quite major.
Yeah. And that's the problem. I mean, I watched the Shetland series and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes, I did.
Because I hadn't read the books.
No.
Yeah. In some ways, I prefer it if an adaptation is either completely faithful or it's just like, okay, we're sort of riffing on the idea here. So the BBC Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, that didn't worry me at all.
No.
Because I just thought it's a different thing.
Yeah. It's a different way of doing it.
J.K. Rowling and all the Harry Potter films, I know that she kept a very, very
tight rein on it.
And that's why they mirror the book so well, I think, personally. Yeah.
She was an executive producer, director, something like that.
Yeah. I imagine she could negotiate what she wanted. Lawyers could negotiate pretty much whatever she wanted. Yeah.
So we talked about this in earlier episodes, and I said, if Netflix came to me and said, we want to buy the rights for your Warrington Detective series, I'd go, okay, where do I sign?
Yes.
And Liz actually said, but would you be happy giving up the rights and seeing it, come on the television and go, well, that's not how they are. And I did think about, and then I would sign on. No.
But I suppose the thing is that it's going to get your name out there.
Yes.
Even if they play around with the story, you know, your name is still going to be there, so that people will come and want to read your books if they've enjoyed the television series. Not necessarily that series, but another series of books that you made.
Yeah, well, if you look at The Handmaid's Tale when they adapted that, and that was number one in the charts. Yep.
Shot up, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, back to women. Oh. Things were on The Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale was,
yes. Yes, indeed, yes.
So I've got a list here of other female authors and, as I say, female characters as well. They're not all necessarily female characters, but of course we go back to our old favourite and, in my opinion, the best writer of crime from the past, and that's Agatha Christie and her Miss Marple series. You know, just love it.
Indeed.
I mean, this, I say, because I'm a little old lady now who knits, all I need is a rocking chair and a shawl. I just chuckle at the way she's such an observant person, the character is. And I think if I think of Agatha Christie, that's who I think of. I think of her as being Miss Marple.
Although she was pretty adventurous.
Well, she was, yeah. She did all sorts of things, didn't
she? Wasn't she one of the first windsurfers?
Oh, yes, she was, wasn't she? And didn't she go rock climbing and all sorts of things?
Well, she went off on archaeological adventures, didn't she?
Yeah, with her second husband. Yes.
And she'd been missing for a while, didn't she?
She did.
Not Miss Marple. I mean.
Oh, Miss Marple on a surfboard. Now there's an image for you.
But yes, in
she knitted the sails herself.
Latterly, as Agatha Christie got older, I could imagine her being the Miss Marple sitting there and nobody notices her, taking everything in and, you know, just dropping the odd word here and there, making people go, I hadn't thought of that sort of thing.
I wonder if that's true, though. I wonder if these authors do replicate the characters they create.
Well, do you replicate the characters you create?
I'd like to be Wen. She is nearly 6 foot tall, a size 10 with long blonde hair, so... You know,
yeah,
say
I could
no
go
more.
Off when.
But yes, her character is someone who, I mean, I'm nothing like her, but you know, I would like to think that a bit of my character goes into her. Whereas Cassie is more rebellious and Cassie's a sidekick, a sergeant, and eventually a DI who goes and. Sort of, she's very good, but she looks at life completely differently from
yes.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I was doing some research ready for today's episode, I've got a list here of famous female crime writers, and I realised that I knew most of them from the television programmes, and I've not actually read them. For example, Val McDermott, War in the Blood. I've never read Val McDermott. Anne Cleves, I've watched the Shetland series, but never read any of her.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, because another one here, Ruth Rendell, Inspector Wexford, I've watched.
I've read all those authors and watched them on the television as well.
I don't know. When I think about it, I don't think this is necessarily, I don't know, I honestly don't know what it is, but I think most of the authors that I read, when I think about it, tend to be men. Ooh. Male authors. Though I've never been aware of that before we were having this conversation.
No. And it's an interesting one, I think, sometimes, because, you know, if you look on the categories on Amazon, you'll see things like, you know, writing for women.
Yes.
And it's like, well, how come there isn't writing for men?
Yeah.
You know, you look at, like, men's adventure fiction and it's all like, you know, mountains and sailboats and horses, and you look at women's adventure fiction, it's a load of manchests. It literally is, because when I've done genre research thinking I'm not putting my book in there, you know, it's like, why is it? And also, you know, that kind of thing, I think that men want to read books by men about men and they don't like it when the lead character is a woman. You know, and you hear this in terms of, you know, getting boys reading and that kind of, well, you know, they want books that will interest them, you know, whereas I think sometimes girls are just expected to put up with the class novel, whatever it is, because
they like reading, so they'll read it anyway.
It's interesting that these female writers usually, not always, because Ruth Rendell is Inspector Wexford and P.D. James is Adam Dalgleish.
Yep.
But normally they write strong female leads, some of the, you know, these writers.
Yeah.
I was going to say Anne Cleves, Vera.
Yes. Yes.
You know, which, I mean, I read those books and I watch them. And again, I feel they're quite close to the books, but they do write episodes for the television based on her characters.
Yes.
And they're not books. They're based on her characters. Yeah. So they've got writers.
Yeah,
who write episodes.
Yeah, and they adapt.
Yes, yeah. Because she doesn't write enough books for them to... I think they do 3 2-hour episodes perhaps once a year. Mm-hmm. So that's like 3 films, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
So, you know, that's they're doing it for quite a long time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to Val McDermott, I mean, again, she's written some very strong female characters. I'm thinking of Carol Jordan in Wire in the Blood.
Yes.
Who was with Tony Hill, who is, you know, they sort of stand side by side as characters. And she also does one, and it's Inspector Karen Perry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, this character is, she does cold cases, and she is very calm. She's very organised. She doesn't take any messing about from her superiors. In fact, they don't really like her. They stuck her in cold cases because she answers them back, but she answers them back in a very respectful way. You know, like, I don't agree with you, sir, that sort of thing. So they stuck her in cold cases thinking that'll keep her quiet. And then she starts stirring up all this mud. And then, you know, she's a brilliant character, and she's got a sidekick called Mint because his surname's Murray.
Yes.
Ah, no, I had to explain that to my boys.
I've seen the television.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
And again, it's another example of me having seen and enjoyed a television programme.
I think we need to set you some homework.
Oh, well, the dark thing is that my wife reads all these people, and so on my Kindle, I can pick any of these books up.
Right. Well, there you go. Low barriers to entry here, Mike. Yes.
I don't know why. Whether it's because I enjoy the series so much that I don't want that impression
to be adulterated by the book.
By reading the book.
Yeah. But are there other male written series that you enjoy, but you also would read the book? I suppose that's the question about whether you feel you've got enough out of the adaptation that you don't need to read the book, or whether that holds true for other authors as well.
Maybe that's another podcast episode we need to do. Oh. Male writers.
Oh, are there any? I mean, are there any serious male writers out there, or do they all just write children's books?
Yes.
Have you ever had that one? If you say you're a writer and go, oh, write for children's. No,
I do get, though, because the three of us, both me, Liz and Mike, we do talks at various times for WIs and libraries, and who else do we do talks for?
Anybody who will hire us.
So not that we're desperate.
If you're looking for 3 writers to come and talk.
If you've got a problem, no one else can help. And if you can find them.
Yes. And people say to me, and friends, well, people, friends, who publishes you? And
yes,
I go, and I go, oh, I'm an indie writer. I get published through Amazon. Oh, so you're not a real writer then? And I'm going, define a real writer, you know, because we've said before, the people who have agents and publishers, etc., brilliant, but they have very little, again, going back to, you know, what you were saying about handing over things, they have very little opinion about what happens to the books once they've written them. They don't have any say, well, very little say in the covers.
That's right.
You know, and they're expected to do a lot of media work and public appearances, etc., which all helps, you know. That's one of the reasons we do talks. It's to promote our work. But as indie writers, we have a lot more control, don't you think, Liz? Because you've got both, haven't you? You've got
kind of, yeah. I mean, I've got a slightly unusual relationship in that a publisher has one of my series, or at least the ebooks of them,
But the thing is, it had been self-published before they came to me and said, we're interested in this. So I've sort of seen it from both sides. And yeah, so I mean, it means that I had control over the original product.
Yes.
And they didn't ask me to change it. I mean, they've changed the covers, which is fine by me. I've got no problem with that. But it is still the same product. You know, I don't have someone saying to me, oh, well, we don't want you to write that.
Yeah.
You know, we want another one just like that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, it's a different relationship.
And also, I mean, Liz is very good at keeping to schedules. Well, you are with your writing and all the other work you do. Whereas, you know, a lot of writers will feel they're under the cosh because maybe they've been given an advance and their publishers are going, we want the first draft in 3 weeks. Yeah. So there's all that pressure. And a lot of people who have a really good debut novel sometimes struggle to follow that up with something as good. Mm-hmm. So there's all that pressure about being published down the traditional route.
Yeah. I remember going to a talk by Will Self and someone said, you know, is there anything you'd change in any of your books, like, you know, in hindsight? And he said, well, the thing is, you know, you have a date and that is when you have to get the manuscript in. And if you miss that date, then your book's probably going to miss its deadline. So, yeah, there's, you know, I think he basically said, yeah, there's stuff that I probably would have done differently if I had time, but I didn't have time.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing. You know, you can't just hold on to your book and, like, coddle it for as long as you want to.
Yeah.
Although if you do what I do sometimes and you set a pre-order up before you've actually written the book again, you need to get it in.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be disappointed. So yeah. But there we go.
Have you noticed, listeners, how we have a habit of going off time?
I have no idea what you
some
mean.
Some of us do.
As a woman, I don't know what you mean. As a female writer.
My two colleagues here have taken us down a road that has nothing to do with female. Well, that's not,
no, okay, well, pick us back
female,
up.
Female writers.
Yeah, and, we are embodying.
Yes.
Here, what we do.
One thing I do.
You know, if you're going to be all like linear progression about it, Mike, I mean, really.
Yeah, or just bloody minded. Midsummer Murders.
Oh, yeah. There. Okay.
Now, I enjoy watching Midsummer
Murders.
Yes,
I do.
Who's the author?
I don't know.
Don't look at me. I think I've seen half of an episode, so I'm not the person to ask.
It's a lady called Caroline Graham.
Ah.
Who is known for the Chief Inspector Barnaby series, which inspired Midsummer Murders.
Right. Ah, there you go.
Now, I always thought...
Well,
I always thought Barnaby was Midsummer Murders.
Mm.
But apparently she wrote Inspector Barnaby series, and from there came Midsummer Murders.
Oh, I just thought they had screenwriters. Yeah. Somebody but thrown an idea in the middle of
it. Isn't it interesting, going back to what I was saying before, that the three of us who all know Inspector Barnaby and know Midsummer Murders inside
out. Yeah, certainly we've heard of it. I know it's a phenomenon.
Had no idea who wrote it.
Yeah.
Male or female.
Yeah, going back to female writers and very successful female writers who did start as an indie published writer, L.J. Ross.
Yes, indeed. Is she still?
No.
Is she not?
I thought
she was. I thought she had her own kind of press, basically.
Well, possibly. But she wrote...
She's big enough.
She was... I think she had a degree in law.
Yeah, she was a practising lawyer.
Yes, she was.
And she gave it up to become a dream. Like a lot of people, like, I want to be a writer. And she wrote Holy Island, The Murder on Holy Island. Holy Island's in it somewhere.
Yes. Is that the first one?
Yeah.
Her first book.
And then she sent it out to various agents / publishers and got nothing. And
bet they're kicking themselves now. Yeah.
Wasn't put off too much when she found out that J.K. had sent hers to hundreds of agents with her first Harry Potter. I mean, that is the tale we all tell.
Of course it is, yes.
So she decided to publish it on Amazon, and it shot to number one in the bestsellers list.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't think she even realised at first.
I think her
husband took a look and said, do you know what's going on there?
Who is the main character in there?
Remind me. It's a DCI Ryan.
Ryan, that's right.
Male or female?
I think it's a male.
Right. Now, she's written quite a few.
She has.
Doesn't she have a new series as
well?
Yes, which is kind of cozier. Is it The Cove?
I don't know about that, but I know she's...
The covers look different. They're quite pastel. Yeah.
Certainly the DCI Ryan ones that started off with that Holy Island, I've read most of them.
Yeah.
So I do read.
There we go. We've rescued you. There's hope.
I mean, she must have written, if I'm not mistaken, 20 plus of those.
Yes, easily. I think so.
I think one
so
of the things she said. She's prolific writers. Yeah, because yeah. I think I went to the self-publishing.
Yeah, the year before. Yeah.
And she basically says, as a lawyer, you're expected to be able to write quickly.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, got no so time it was to something that stood her in great stead. Yeah. And, you know, Mark Dawson, also a former lawyer, yeah. writes.
Because hers are novels. They don't fall into the novella.
Oh, they're big. They're big books. Yeah.
70,000.
I mean, and she sells millions of books now. Mm. Millions. So, you know, and we always used to talk about 20 Shades of Grey, that being discovered off...
50.
Is it?
There's a whole lot of grey, Carol.
Somewhere on the line you lost 30 of them, Carol.
Tell I'm not ready.
Going back to L.J. Ross, though.
Yeah.
I don't think those DCI Ryan books have been made into a series, television series.
No, not I don't yet. Think so. No, which sure, surprises sure me.
Now, I wonder if that's why I've read them, enjoyed them, because there wasn't a television programme that was going to put me off in right. the first place. I don't know.
No,
I'm trying to search my inner self here.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Get to see feminine side.
It's scary.
Yeah. So, as I say, I believe, and Liz or Mike, you might know better than me, that big publishing companies do have scouts that look at the stuff that's on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened with her. I think somebody picked her up.
I wonder how many of that series she'd written.
By that time?
By the time she was, as you say, picked up by a publisher.
Don't know.
No, but I don't.
I shall look into it further because I think it's really interesting. Mm. So much for you're not a real writer. You know?
Yes.
So both Liz and I write about female sleuths.
Yes, indeed.
And we're going to take the opportunity to read a little bit out of our books. I'm going to go first. And this is out of the very first Warrington Detective. Number one, Searching for Evil. Number four will be out soon. And as I say, my two main characters in all four books are DCI or DI Wemprice and her sergeant Cassie. They do go further up the ranks as the books progress. So they're in the midst of a investigation at the moment, and it's the team meeting, and Cassie has gone for the butty run. The following morning, Cassie was doing the butty run before the team briefing when she met John Barron. "Morning, Cassie," he said casually as he held the canteen door open for her. John is the pathologist, by the way. "Morning, Doc." She slid past him, trying to remember who wanted brown sauce and who wanted red. "Oh, by the way," he called after her. Nothing came off on the corpse's DNA, nothing on file. "Right, I'll let them know. Thanks, Cassie." "Oh, Doc." He turned to face her. "Yes? RDI?" "Yes." "You know her better than anybody else on the team." "Probably. Where's this going, Cassie? Not planning a surprise birthday party for her, are you?" Cassie looked shocked. "Oh, God, is it her birthday?" He grinned. "No idea, which tells you what I know about her. Not much at all. But you probably know more than I do." "Probably. So what's her backstory, Doc?" Detective Inspector Wemprice was an enigma to Cassie, and she didn't like that lack of information. After all, knowledge is power. "Do you know what I think, Cassie?" John Barron looked slightly annoyed as he said this. "What?" "I think you should ask her yourself." "She won't tell me anything." She shrugged her shoulders and smiled. "And that's my point." John Barron released the door and headed back to the safety of his lab.
Ooh.
So they're a new team at the moment, and as I say, Cassie is the sort of person that needs to weigh people up. She needs to know more about her boss, because that way she feels she's got a better, you know, more even playing field. So
She's not afraid to kind of go in with both feet.
No. She often upsets people.
Yeah, she's not the subtlest. No. I do like her very much. By the way, I kind of made you go first so I could like look up L.J. Ross, and it says for more under her imprint, Dark Skies Publishing.
Oh, right.
Which also I think involves some philanthropic concerns.
So, oh, nice. nice.
Good on her.
Yeah.
So there you go. And she seems like a lovely person from everything I've seen about her.
You were very impressed when she did the talk.
Yes, I was. Yes.
Good. So what's your strong female character?
Okay, my female character, I'm going to go back to Mrs. Hudson, and I've picked a situation where she's basically been sent on a bit of a mission by Sherlock Holmes. And basically, because it's the kind of mission that really she can do and he can't. So she can go where he can't. And they know that the wife of someone they're very, very interested in is taking tea at a hotel. So this is where Mrs. Hudson goes in. A table by the window, madam. Yes, please. The waiter led the way and pulled out my chair. It is most unlike my friend to be late, I commented, looking around the room for that fictitious person. I am sure she will not keep you waiting long, said the waiter smoothly. May I take your name so that I can direct her when she arrives? I am Miss Fry. He bowed and withdrew, and I turned my attention to the menu, taking care not to stare at the two women sitting at the next table. Thus far, all had gone to plan. I had read Mr. Holmes's case notes that morning and purchased more wool at the haberdasher's. On that errand, I had also visited three ladies' rooms to assess their facilities and lighting. After lunch, the time dragged and I willed the hands of the clock to turn faster. When the time came, I fairly jumped out of my chair. I called goodbye to Billy and set off, diverting into a ladies' room to assume my new identity. Brown's Hotel was a mile away. It was a fine, crisp day and I enjoyed my walk in the sunshine, window shopping and watching passers-by through my pince-nez. I turned into Albemarle Street and the cream-coloured facade of the hotel rose before me. Afternoon, miss. A tall man in livery hurrying past touched his cap to me and I realised that Mr. Holmes had just gone off duty. My watch said that it was 4:05. I took a deep breath and walked into the tea room. Mrs. Euphemia Stanley was just as Mr. Holmes had described, a short, stoutish, dark-haired woman of about 40, elaborately dressed, but she had an open, pleasant face and an amiable manner. Her friend was around the same age, fair-haired and slim, with the air of a thoroughbred horse. I listened to their conversation while I studied the menu, deciding with regret that since my friend had deserted me, perhaps I should not treat myself to a full afternoon tea. The waiter returned and I ordered a pot of tea. "Which cake would you recommend?" I asked. "The lemon sponge is popular," he replied. "Oh," interjected Mrs. Stanley's friend, "if you're only having one cake, it should be the Dundee, my dear. Exquisite." "A slice of the Dundee, then, please." I disliked almonds. Yet if it meant establishing friendly relations with the next table, I would eat a slab of cake with pleasure. "On your own, dear?" Mrs. Stanley looked sympathetic. "My friend was supposed to meet me here. I wonder where she can be." My innocent remark opened the door for a flood of speculation and anecdote from Mrs. Stanley and her friend. The iniquities of London cabmen, the beastly underground railway, going to the wrong hotel, and the time when Mrs. Stanley had been kept waiting at a shop 20 minutes for bottle green ribbon. Apple green they tried me with, Kelly green, olive green. Oh, I was fuming, but I kept my countenance, of course. She assumed a distant, serene expression and I could not help but laugh. My tea and cake arrived and I made appreciative noises as the almonds cracked between my teeth. The Dundee cake apart, I could not remember when I had last spent such an agreeable afternoon. When I entered half morning, I had made and received calls from a few ladies in the church congregation, but I was out of practice in the social graces. Mrs. Hudson, as I now was, constrained me so much that I only managed a handful of pleasantries and platitudes before making my excuses. Here, the conversation flowed freely and I let it wash over me, doubting that any of it would be useful, but enjoying it for what it was. The two ladies called for the bill. I could not follow them, that would be too obvious. "I hope your friend turns up safe and well," said Mrs. Stanley. "Oh, I'm sure she will, thank you." I sipped my tea and toyed with my cake, trying to avoid another mouthful. Mrs. Stanley reached into her bag. "Oh!" She frowned and pulled out a crumpled letter. "I've forgotten to post this, and the carriage will be here directly." "I can post it for you." I took another sip of tea. "I pass a pillar box on my way home, and I have a letter to post too." "Oh, would you, dear? That would be so kind." Mrs. Stanley held out the letter and I put it into my handbag without looking at it. I am terribly forgetful. I put a stamp on it ready and I told myself that I should tie a knot in my handkerchief and... Oh, here is John now. She waved to the footman at the door, then shook my hand. "Lovely to meet you, Miss Fry," I said. "Amelia Fry." Effie Stanley. I'm sure we'll meet again. I'm always bumping into people. There we go. So,
there's contact.
Indeed, there is contact. Yeah. And when she gets home, Mr. Holmes is very surprised at what she's managed to do.
Yes. Yeah. So she's got the letter with the address on. Did she take the letter home? Well, we've got to read it, really, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, there is more to that letter than meets the eye. But you will have to read A House of Mirrors to find out what it is.
Right.
So I think we're about there. Anything more to say on the subject of female authors?
I haven't. I think we've had a good chat there. We've got a lot off our chest.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, definitely.
But it's interesting. I'm very interested in what Mike said about not having read some of the... I mean, I'm guilty that there are some series on television or films that I've thoroughly enjoyed and never, you know, read the books, but a lot of the people that you were talking about, I have actually done both.
Well, that's what I think it might be. I hadn't thought about it before, but it might be interesting for us to do a similar episode about male.
Yes, definitely.
Why not?
And see what that throws up.
Yeah, so your opinions would be, you know, most gratefully received. Oh. And we'll call it a day. So until next Thursday at 5 p.m, goodbye. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.